All right, we are here with this week's culture segment. I am back with Mark Driscoll here at the table. Hey, Mark.
Howdy.
Hey, good to have you.
Yes.
Now, this is going to be, we were talking with Grace, obviously, in our other interview, both of you, about the book. And this is just going to be hodgepodge Mark Driscoll from recent years of ministry, things that people know about you, things that people don't know, things that people make up, quite frankly.
There's a lot of those. Maybe. Just so you know, not everything on the internet's true.
Oh, man.
Yeah, just so you know.
And I have some of them posted on my wall, too, so we'll see. Okay, well, we'll ferret out what some of those are. The first thing that I actually threw out on Facebook, like, what would you like me to ask Mark? And so some of these come out of that. So we'll find this out. But the first one, and this is pretty much something I'm sure you've had to answer before, is what hedges do you have in place to safeguard against, like, the big three, the things that trip up people who are in positions of influence? So sex, money, and power.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know those were the big three. I thought it was Ford, GM, and Chevy.
Well, that would be the four, you know, cars.
Yes. For me, it's all kinds of stuff. I work from home most days, so I like being around Grace and the kids, so I'm around them all the time. I never travel alone. I've got a male assistant, and between the two of us, we have a lot of kids. And so I never get a hotel room by myself. I never travel by myself. I mean, I'm constantly with someone else. Actually pay others to do my bookkeeping and to do my, cell phone and all of that, and all of that is made known to the executive elders at Mars Hill. So my entire budget, my cell phone, all of that, I don't have any private email account, I don't have a private cell phone account, everything comes through the assistant. I mean, I'm kind of a freak, to be honest with you, because my thought is if you have nothing to hide, then hide nothing. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have a personal private life with a separate email or cell phone or access or anything of that nature. And I'm with Grace and the kids the vast majority of the time. And when I'm not, it's a male assistant and usually a pastor who's with me. That's on a Sunday. That's on a travel, anything. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm not going to lie. We're doing this interview in Mark's conference room, and I did use your restroom and dried my hands in your towel. I'm very sorry about that.
Okay. Well, we'll have somebody get right on that.
there was no one else in there, though.
Yeah.
It was just me.
That's good.
Just so that you know, I want to be above board about that.
I appreciate that. Okay. So, by God's grace, I'm above reproach, and my goal is a boring testimony.
Okay. Hey, then you can join mine ranks.
Yeah.
That's good. Good time. So we'll start a club. Okay. You describe yourself as a truth teller, and it shows. Mm-hmm. Definitely, I would say, leaning in the areas of, gifts of prophecy and stuff like that, black and white, very much in that sense. How do you balance that with grace and vulnerability in your personal life?
Yeah. If you have that disposition, more the truth teller, the prophet, and you're not dealing with hurting people, you become, I think, idealistic and unsympathetic. Hmm. And that's where nerds, pastors tend to be nerds.
Yeah.
They read books and talk and write. And all of a sudden, the world becomes very easy for them. It should be like this and not like that. And then all of a sudden, you start dealing with human beings and you realize, complicated, a lot of variables, not easy. And you get your heart broken a lot, pretty devastating. And so, so for me, the key is to stay in pastoral ministry. It's one of the reasons I know that, God's called me to be a pastor. And when you're dealing with new Christians and non-Christians and hurting people and real trouble, I mean, like, yesterday, give you just, here's, average day. Yesterday, the book came out, and, I was on the phone with a buddy of mine who's, they've had six pregnancies. How many? Two miscarriages.
And they have live births.
Two live births, and the youngest daughter's got really bad spina bifida. And she's a dear, we adore her, but she's got a walker and all kinds of massive problems. Well, they just found out that they're pregnant with a little boy, and he's probably got very severe spina bifida, may not live. So I'm on the phone with them, talking to them and trying to figure out how we can help and serve and pray for them. It's those kinds of real people, real life, real stuff that helps keep real perspective. So for me, I think that's key is still being a pastor and a husband and a father and involved in people's lives.
Okay. You have a lot to say to men.
Yeah.
and you, especially single men, and you've categorized many of them as chauvinists, cowards, or complainers, whether in sermons or in writing and stuff.
Yeah.
And women frankly, as enablers of a lot of this behavior. And no surprise there for us. We see that. We write about it at Boundless. We are definitely on board with you. And even though a lot of our guys kind of come, you know, once in a while, we have to say something super kind to them, because then they're like, you know, oh, you're just always yelling at us. Why are you yelling at us? So I'll just be like, Mark yells at you more than we do. So
totally.
That's what I'm gonna say from now on. But beyond preaching at them from the stage, what are you doing at Mars Hill to really turn that around and to really move men towards marriage? And what are you seeing as results?
Yeah, it really has established a culture where, you know, the guys don't put up with certain things from other guys, and the guys tend to be pretty stern with one another. It's more among the guys, it's more like a sports team or a military culture. You know, mm-hmm. there's a chain of command, and mm-hmm. there's ways things are to be done. And so what we've seen is, still, it's hard to tell with the growth, but insofar as we could tell, the slight majority of the church might still be men, and tons of single men. So men tend to come in and get saved, and then get fully assaulted, and then pursue marriage, mm-hmm. And have kids. And so we have a couple hundred weddings a year, and right now we've got about 2,000 children every Sunday under the age of 10.
Wow.
And so we've seen thousands of men get saved and then get married and then now start having kids. And so what we're seeing too is the guys who take this advice earlier, they're ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by 21, 22, they're married, own a home, and on a career track.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, most guys at 22 are trying to, you know, figure out all the Zach Galifianakis lines from the last movie and,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
you know, trying to figure out how to become a guild leader. I mean, they're just yeah. way behind. They're
yeah.
not even in the starting blocks. So.
Okay. So you have, you know, a lot of guys will criticize you as saying, Mark thinks that if I'm not some kind of cage fighter, that I'm just a wimp. Like, is there any room for any other men on the continuum? And why, in light of that, do you think it's so necessary for men to be passionate about a church and involved
yeah.
in a church? For that
I always
purpose?
Say men need to be tough and tender, as Jesus was. I mean, he's really tough with religious blockheads and legalists. And then with women and those who are hurting and suffering, he's really, really tender. And so to really be a man means you need to be tough and tender, and you need to be discerning. You need to be tough to protect women and children. You need to be tender with women and children. And in the church, most guys are more tender, and they got to work on their toughness.
Right.
That doesn't mean they need to be big and burly, but they need to have courage and take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they can't take a punch, they could take responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If preaching and eldership are out, what are some of the roles for women in the church, and how can those be cultivated and encouraged?
Yeah, our theology is that women can hold the office of deacon. That means full-time staff, seminary, theological education, serve communion, lead worship, you know, anything but the office of elder, which includes preaching, in my opinion, according to 1 Timothy 5. And so you'll see at Mars Hill, you know, women that are on full-time staff, getting theological education formally, serving communion, leading worship, leading, you know, small groups, leading classes, running events. And I think where the men are strong and taking responsibility, it allows the women to use their gifts without feeling the whole burden and pressure of the church. And in a lot of churches, the women are feeling the whole burden and pressure of the church because the men aren't, quite frankly, you know, really doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So anything short of eldership at Mars Hill,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay. That's interesting because we talk a lot about that at Boundless, how women need to step back and create a vacuum and allow men to step in and lead, because so many women have taken over, you know, and feminized the church and really gone in and made these things happen that guys are like, what, you know, just sitting back. And so create the vacuum, ladies. All right. Speaking of women, and we alluded to this in our last interview as well, women who are single, especially those mm-hmm. of us who are getting older,
mm-hmm.
older. Ancient in some cases, in my case. But my purpose is to serve as an encouragement for the women
yeah.
who listen, because most of them are younger than I am, and they figure as long as I'm still in the fray, there's hope for them. But what hope is there for us if we are literally not called the celibate service, and yet we are, our hands are kind of tied, we're not supposed to be
yeah.
out pursuing men, we're not supposed to be running around being all crazy, we don't want to become feminazis. What is the hope for us, and how can we trust God with our stories in a culture that we live in today?
Yeah, it's all kinds of thoughts. I mean, and now that I got daughters, I mean, this is what I tell them is, you know, and our daughter's in high school now, we're that old, but, you know, first of all, you do need a man in your life, and his name's Jesus, so that's the first relationship and the first man to trust. The second is, it's better to be single than married to some jackalope, you know, mm-hmm. and some women, in an effort to just cure their singleness, find some guy and you know, hand them the cue cards and tell them to read his lines and play the role, but that doesn't lead to 30 years of happiness and fidelity and joy. And so sometimes it's better to be single than to be married to certain people. And in addition, I would say we worship a guy who died a single virgin. I don't know if that's one of his miracles. It's usually not listed in the systematic theology text. But, I mean, it's interesting that God comes and lives a completely full, perfect, ideal model life as a single person. And so, you know, I think sometimes in the church, those who are single can feel like second-class citizens or like I'm kind of stuck in this holding pattern and I can't move on to the next life stage until I am married. I would fight against all of those stereotypes, especially for the women. And I would say what Ruth did was interesting. I love the story of Ruth and Boaz in the Bible. She didn't chase Boaz, but she got in his way. Mm-hmm. And Naomi even told her, get all dressed up. There's the big party. They just brought in the harvest. Wait till he's had a little bit to eat and drink and he's in a pretty good mood and then feel free to bump into him. So I think there's where women are saying, you know, I don't want to chase a guy. Well, you don't because a guy needs to pursue you. But you can get in his way. And I think there are subtle, creative ways to do that. And I think sometimes women, in an effort not to pursue men, so withdraw that they're not putting themselves in the way of a man that they may be interested in.
Mm-hmm. And she put herself in the way of a good guy.
A good
guy.
I mean,
I like how the fact that the first kinsman redeemer stepped back from responsibility and as a result, you know,
yeah.
really missed out on a lot.
So, yeah.
So I think that makes sense. That's good. Okay, a lot has been said of your style of preaching, including your use of stark language, edgy humor, and explicit illustrations. And
you're
you've taken
welcome.
A lot of, okay, and you've taken a lot of criticism for that. Where do you stand? And I know, you know, I was reading some of the stuff about like John MacArthur in the past and him all getting up in your grill and that kind of stuff, and John Piper having to come and be like, no, he's still solid. I just need to talk to him. Isn't that just awesome? These guys are just in your lives. It's awesome. But kind of where do you stand on that now?
Yeah, for me, I believe in strong language. I believe the Bible uses it. I mean, it calls Israel whores. That's not great, you know. Mm-hmm. There's one.
We would say ho. At the Boundless Show.
You would say ho at the Boundless Show? All right, we'll make sure to let the translators know that. Little footnote in there for you. The Boundless Translation.
We're okay with ho, just
ho.
Not.
you know, there's an Old Testament prophet who calls women in a city the cows of Bashan. I mean, to this day, that's still not really awesome. Like, if we dedicated this show to the cows of whatever city, those women would not probably be a real rich donor base for your future ministry. So the Bible, we also worship a guy who got murdered. I don't know if you know that. The book has a guy who offended people. So I'm not saying we should always be offensive or only be offensive, but I think sometimes just that Christian light, vanilla, everybody's nice, everybody's smiling. You know, there are prophetic edges and sharp words in the Bible where it cuts across the noise and it can't be ignored. And sometimes for my thing is like, if I say the same thing the way that everybody else says it, I'll be ignored. And I don't want to be ignored. I want to be heard. I don't necessarily mean to be liked, but I want to instigate conversation around certain issues. And I want to, I mean, in a culture where there's so much noise, you've got to find a different frequency to run on to, you know, to get, and part of it is too, that's who I am. Not saying I need to be a sanctified version of myself, but it doesn't matter how many years I live on the earth and how filled I am with the Holy Spirit. I will never be Mr. Rogers. I'm not going to put on a sweater and lead the train to Never Neverland. It's just not going to happen.
Cardigans are coming back in though, just so you know.
Well, but some of us have too thick of a neck to pull that off.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that could be a factor. Uh-huh. Okay. So speaking of that and speaking of the whole, it was funny because I was watching a video, I think Piper was speaking at a basics conference and he talked about your sermon series on Song of Solomon. And he said, yeah, well, someone, John MacArthur sent that to me and I listened to it and I thought it was horrible. And so I went after Mark and I talked to him about it. And like within a day, you know, that was off the site and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I think that shows. And at the same time in that spot, he said, but what we have to realize is, first of all, he said, you two are good for each other, he said. And he said, we also have to realize that Mark is doing an important work that I and others cannot do. And so I think that really speaks to, first, your teachability in that situation, and second, just to this relationship that you have with older guys. And what really have you and Piper been able to learn from each other? And how have you been able to sharpen each other?
I love him and I appreciate him. And there's other men like that. The co-author of a lot of my books, Gary Brashears, is an older man and professor of theology. And I mean, there's actually now a fairly wide audience of older men that I've invited to my life to rebuke, to talk to me, to call me. And when they have, I will post a retraction like, okay, mm-hmm. I will submit to spiritual authority, or I'll take that down, or I shouldn't have said that. And there's other times I push on them and I just say, you're being a coward, you're being a chicken, just because five fundamentalists freaked out and have a blog, you know, it's just, you know, mm-hmm. put on your big boy pants and deal with it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I will push back. I'm not, but I will submit to spiritual authority. I have consistently, when I've crossed the line and been called on, I think I've been consistent to say, I acknowledge that, but I don't draw the lines in the same places that the average fundamentalist does. I just don't. I'm very conservative theologically, conservative enough to not add to the scriptures, which I think sometimes the most conservative people do.
Okay. All right, you talk in Real Marriage, that last chapter, and we didn't talk about this in the interview, but you talked about reverse engineering your marriage.
Yeah.
I want you to briefly reverse engineer your kids. What are your hopes for them? And as you very really look at them becoming young adults someday, maybe they'll listen to the Boundless Show. I hope they do and read our stuff. It is amazing. I'm just saying. But really, what, as you see them as young adults, what do you see? Hopes and dreams, and what are you going to do now to get them to where you want them to be?
Yeah, we've got five kids, kindergarten to freshman in high school, three boys, two girls. And it's pretty amazing raising Christian kids having not grown up a Christian. So it's, you know, it's amazing to observe.
I was already intimidated by your daughter's bio of herself. She's like, well, anyway, I'm reading through the Bible for the third or fourth time. And I'm just like, oh. Okay.
She's amazing.
She's twice in the ESV.
Yeah.
So you should study be proud
Bible.
Of that.
She just knocks it. Junior high, she's knocking it out. Mm-hmm. I got 20-year-old guys like, what? Those words are big and there's no pictures, you know. So
Yeah. Good luck on that marriage journey for her. Yeah. That's going to be good times.
Well,
you're going to age exponentially getting that one done.
Yeah. So, well, for me with the kids, I mean, there's general things like I want them to love Jesus. I want them to love the church. I want them to love their mom and dad and their family and have a heart for the gospel. I mean, there's certain things you just want. I mean, of course, I would pray for their health. We'll accept whatever God gives. But, you know, you want your kids to be healthy and protected. But part of it, too, is getting to know each of the kids and figuring out who they are and not just treating them as a herd. So, like, Ashley, our oldest, she's an introvert. She's wicked smart. She's super responsible. She is amazing. And so, you know, for her, she wants to go to college and be an editor and study theology and be a writer and be a stay-at-home mom. And I mean, so she's got her little track. Now our other daughter, her sister, Alexi, wow, completely different. She looks like Tinkerbell. If you've ever watched Despicable Me, the two sisters, Margot and Edith, that's our two daughters. So we asked Alexi the other day, because Ashley's like, yeah, she's in all the honors classes and straight A's and got her college degree and figuring out what she's going to do for grad school, and she's a freshman. I mean, we asked Alexi, what are you going to do? She's like, I don't know, whatever's fun. I was like, so you're going to go to clown college. That's literally what I asked her. I said, so you go to clown college. And she's just very affectionate and arty and disorganized, and she's just usually riding around the house on Heelys, just singing to herself.
She's staying fit. That's good. That's good. That's a plus.
So it's like, you know, they're not going to be the same. We make them room together to sanctify one another. One half is completely organized. The other half looks like a hurricane. But it's really getting to know each of the kids and like, okay, who are they going to be as opposed to, you know, what would we impose on them? It's more, who are they? And in the grace of God, how could we nurture that? So with the boys, I'm talking a lot about finances and money and income and interest rates and, you know, how much a car costs and how much a house costs and how much a lease is on a vehicle versus a purchase. And I mean, they're, you know, 6, 10, and 12. And so trying to get them to think about finances and provision and responsibility and all of that. So it's fun, though. I mean, it's really, really fun. I love being a dad. But it's a big responsibility. You're raising a human being. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a thing.
Yeah, it is. Well, we will, That's all the questions I
no
have for you.
No more controversial questions?
I don't know. I'm going to have to come up with some and email them
to you.
That's
amazing.
We'll, I know. I was trying, whatever. You know, we just came in. We wanted to see Seattle.
Yeah, that's cool. Get some good coffee.
We thought we'd throw in an interview while we had the time. So, but really a privilege, Mark. Thank you so much for your time. And you have, like I said many times, tons of friends and fans over at Boundless who are praying for your ministry,
cool.
for your
Thank
family.
You.
Even more so now, knowing, you know, you're going to be heading into a book tour and lots of things going on, and just really appreciate your example to us.
Well,
so thanks so much
it's
for
been
your time.
Fun to get to know you. And I'm glad to make you look moderate. So well, and you're welcome.
Looking moderate, and now that you've met me, you are now responsible for finding me a husband. So
okay.
you're going to need to get on that.
Okay, I'll get on Twitter
Even
in just
though,
a minute,
and I'm just going to overlook the highlights comments and just move on.
I like the comment.
Well,
I like the highlights, but they didn't seem natural. It seemed
well. Nothing about me is that natural. Trust me. There's not a lot I can say in response to that. I'm going to be honest. So good times with that. So thanks so much.
Cool. Thank you.